and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In 2016, Donald Trump easily won Ohio on his way to being elected president. But this year, polls show a tight race between Trump and Joe Biden. So is Ohio a battleground state again? And will it be a bellwether for the nation? David Giffels, a professor at the University of Akron and former columnist at that city's Beacon Journal newspaper, is the author of the new book, Barnstorming Ohio, to Understand America. I spoke with Giffels earlier. Here is our recorded conversation. David Giffels, welcome so much to Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
It's our pleasure to have you. Listen, I want to ask just right off the bat, what makes Ohio so interesting to you as something that can be understood in an effort to better understand the entire country?
Ohio has a fascinating and kind of uncanny track record when it comes to choosing the American president. We have accurately chosen the winner in every presidential election going back to the 19th century. In 29 of the last 31 elections, we've chosen the president. And we have a perfect track record since 1964. No other state has a record like that. And I'd always kind of known that fact as a lifelong Ohioan and somebody who's worked here as a journalist for many years. But I wanted to really kind of dive deep into that in what I knew was going to be kind of one of the most important presidential elections in our lifetime.
You know, we hear that a lot about this election is the most important one of our lifetimes. And when that type of rhetoric is tossed around, as we're seeing it a lot in this particular election, we saw it a lot in 2016 as well. Does Ohio have a heightened sense of responsibility or a higher role?
I don't know that you could say we have any sort of greater responsibility or role than anybody else, but I think there are groups in Ohio that are looked at as part of the reason that Donald Trump kind of pulled off a surprise victory in 2016. And I'm thinking primarily of blue-collar union voters in the industrial parts of the state that have traditionally been sort of reliable Democratic voters who swung heavily toward Trump in 2016, as well as rural voters in the Appalachian part of the state who were kind of traditionally overlooked and kind of showed up in more visible fashion in 2016. So I think people are interested in what trend those groups might represent. And part of my instincts in Barnstorming Ohio, the title of the book, was to go to those places and really try to understand people kind of on their own terms.
And this book takes place over the course of a year, from March of last year to March of this year. And obviously, those two marches are quite different. The world sort of fell apart in March of this year. And before I ask you a little bit about the pandemic and its impact on your storytelling, if there was one, I want you to take us to Buzzard Day in Hinckley, because I didn't know about this. Maybe some others do. I did not. Will you tell us what Buzzard Day is? Because it sort of sets up the onset of the pandemic as you start to wind down the book.
Yeah, absolutely. This book, because it had to be completed in a year, and I had a due date to my publisher in March of this year, I had to kind of script it out pretty carefully. I had to kind of know where I was going and what my goals were for the book. And so very early on, I realized that I knew that Ohio's primary was scheduled for March 17th of 2020. And I was kind of interested in ending kind of ironically on this event that happens every year on March 15th. In Hinckley, Ohio, in Northeast Ohio. Local legend has it that for countless generations, the buzzards, the turkey vultures that migrate south every year, return to Hinckley every year on the same day, on March 15th, just through some sort of like this genetic code that they have to go back looking for dead animals to feast on. And so it's this sort of like small town festival has arisen around it, and it's this kind of symbolic beginning of spring and so forth. So originally I thought Buzzards Day would be sort of like a target event to end the book on, with no idea that March 15th would end up being sort of the day the world changed, really.
And we are talking with David Giffels. He is the author of Barnstorming Ohio to Understand America. He's also a professor of English at the University of Akron, a former columnist at the Akron Beacon Journal. And so March of this year, David, brings this pandemic right to our homes. And Governor Mike DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton, the director of public health at that time, they were nationally lauded early on for their response to COVID-19. And then, of course, as things do in our times, the pandemic became highly politicized. And following some economic anxiety on top of the health anxiety, Acton resigned when some threats against her became too much, apparently. And DeWine became less of a trailblazer in addressing this crisis. And I'm wondering, was there anything that you saw happen in Ohio as part of our national story during this period that you would have liked to have profiled in this book?
Yeah. You mean after the book kind of ends at the beginning of the pandemic, and you mean after?
Exactly.
Yeah, after those events. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I set out like in pursuit of a question, like, is Ohio, is it the bellwether that we have, that I have always perceived it to be? And does it still hold that role? Does it still, and by bellwether, I mean, especially Ohio has tended to not be an overt leader, but to experience things, many of the American things, in ways that have offered lessons. And often those are in the negative, like losses that we've experienced before the rest of the country did, that we can kind of offer direction. And three specific things have occurred since March that I think kind of reinforce what I believed. And the first is the way that we responded to the pandemic. In the early going, nationally, one after another analyst and commentator looking at Ohio and saying, Ohio is doing everything right. They're following science. They're making quick decisions. Decisive acts were taking place. And working collaboratively within governmental functions to address, take a holistic approach. I don't think that was by accident. Mike DeWine has said more than once that the person he most carefully chose for his cabinet was his public health director. And I believe that that's because we were already dealing with a public health crisis, which was the opioid epidemic. And so when Amy Acton and he sort of sprung into action when the pandemic happened, they were following a lot of the lessons that they had learned in how to address the opioid crisis, which is first to listen to science and follow the guidance of medical experts, to unite forces within government and social service agencies and so forth, and to act. And so those things were happening as this story continued. The second thing that I think Ohio has to teach is that as soon as the pandemic hit and things started to shut down, of course, the country suffered massive job loss. And I've often said, if you want to know how to cope with massive job loss, look to Ohio, look especially to Northeast Ohio, the Rust Belt part of Ohio. We've been dealing with massive job loss for two generations. And so I think there were a lot of lessons here on how to cope, within families, and also how to address it kind of institutionally. And then the third thing, of course, that has happened this year is this high profile racial tension. And one of the chapters in the book is set in Cincinnati. I went to your city specifically to write about race. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that is because Cincinnati has this its own story to tell of what happens in the aftermath of a police shooting of a young unarmed black man, which has been the trend for the tragic trend, in this tension for more than a generation. But I went back to the 2001 shooting of Timothy Thomas in the Over the Rhine neighborhood, and the way that Cincinnati responded, not just in the moment, but came up with this document called the Collaborative Agreement, which has become a national model of how to not just address a single act, but try to introduce police and social reform in a way that was very effective and is still looked at as a model of how to react in the heat of the moment.
We're talking with David Giffels, author of Barnstorming Ohio to Understand America. He's also a professor of English at the University of Akron and a former columnist at the Akron Beacon Journal. The book touches on the deadly mass shooting in downtown Dayton and the subsequent efforts to curb some access to deadly weapons. And you sort of tell the story in the context of some festivals that are taking place simultaneously around the state. And we all remember when Governor Mike DeWine spoke in Dayton soon after the Oregon District shooting, and a man in the crowd that you identify as Bob Mendenhall shouted, "Do something." It became a pretty significant moment in that period, but not much was done. And I'm wondering, based on what you learned over the course of creating this book, what we can learn about Ohio from that specific moment in the state's history, this deadly shooting that takes place in a major Ohio city, and then a lack of serious response.
Yeah, I mean, I would sort of parse that a little bit more, because DeWine actually did do something in the aftermath of that. And my sense is that whether it was that single sort of spontaneous utterance that this man shouts out, "Do something," and this is the day after the shooting, and the crowd just picked it up as a chant, just very spontaneously, "Do something." And he did. Something similar to what I referred to before, where when we were dealing with the opioid crisis, both he and John Kasich were learning how to bring together various parts of government, of social services, of community groups, of law enforcement to deal in a sort of holistic way with a large, you know, involved problem. So that opioids model seemed to influence how DeWine reacted, and he was putting together this plan to deal with gun legislation with some, you know, some firearms restrictions and so forth. That was, again, reaching across different factions, and it's stalled in the legislature. So again, and then similarly, when the pandemic hit, and he was using a similar kind of model and approach, but then got ground down by those other forces of government. I guess the lesson is that he has shown us what a strong singular leader who can see, like, sort of with big picture kinds of eyes, which I think is one of his benefits. If that leader can see it through, you know, like the sort of the swamp. I don't know if that's possible, but I think we've seen at least what it looks like when somebody is leading it toward that direction. And then how can we, like, address what could happen at those next steps of, you know, like going into a very divided legislature and trying to get them to then agree to that.
David, Ohio has five distinct regions, and our friends at WKSU characterize them as the Northeast, a post-industrial region that feels like the Northeast of America. The Southwest, here where we are in Cincinnati, a conservative and more southern-feeling region. The Northwest, which is rural and the beginning of the true American Midwest. The Southeast, which is Appalachia. And Central Ohio, a growing white-collar suburban area. I'm wondering, based on your year-long tour of exploring Ohio intimately for Barnstorming Ohio to Understand America, do you feel as though you better understand America?
First of all, I recognize that that's a pretty ambitious mission to understand America. But I do, I do, because I feel like as I said before, I was trying to understand individual Americans on their own terms rather than as, like, political types or as a pollster might look at it. And because I came to understand very different kinds of people, at least within their own example, that I do have a broader understanding. You know, I opened the book, and this was a purposeful choice, with a man who had been a lifelong Democrat, had voted twice for Barack Obama, and then voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and thinks Donald Trump is the best thing that's happened to the country in a long time. And rather than force him into some sort of a pigeonhole, I allowed him to be a messy set of contradictions on the page. And I feel like I can have a better understanding of, I think a lot of us feel after the 2016 election that we don't at all understand somebody who voted for the other side, whether we voted for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. There's a lot of this, the other side must be crazy. I didn't want that. I wanted to try to understand, as somebody who I say openly in the book, I did not vote for Donald Trump. I wanted to understand somebody who did. And so I began by understanding him, and then I continued to just allow people to speak and to tell their story of being an American and what that means, and to allow those stories to stand for themselves. And so I would be wrong to say that somehow these add up to a true understanding of America, but I do think it adds up to a true understanding of a set of Americans, which I think at least that has some value.
David Giffels is the author of Barnstorming Ohio: To Understand America. David, thank you so much for sharing the book with us and sharing some time with us to talk about it. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity and enjoyed talking with you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.